Hello, welcome to Drive the Bid from Auto Hunter, driven by ClassicCars.com. My name is Diego Rosenberg, and here we have Derek Shakey.
Hello.
You should be saying hello to me. I'm here. They're somewhere else.
Hello.
Thank you. So, what do we have in the news?
All right. So, Bentley has collaborated with another English company called Forstalgia. Excuse me, to make a limited edition run of driving gloves. So these feature surplus leathers and materials from the Bentley factory. And they, according to the press release, they take about 4 weeks to make by hand. And just like the leather on a Bentley steering wheel, the leather is marked with a regular fork to, I guess, lay out where they're going to stitch things. And then the stitching is done by hand.
So I think it was last week you mentioned is somewhere in Miami, they're going to have a Bentley apartment building.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. The, yeah, exactly.
Are these gloves going to come as part of like a housewarming gift or something?
That would make sense. Now, here's the thing. You know, they say limited run. They don't say exactly how many pairs, but what they do disclose is that they will be gifted to Bentley customers. So that, yeah, that would make a nice housewarming gift. But
are they numbered since it's limited edition?
Doesn't say, but I mean, it would make sense if they were. But yeah, they didn't give a actual production number.
Okay. I guess anything for the wealthy.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, so many car brands are lifestyle brands outside of that. Because, I mean, you go to Mercedes website or really almost any company, especially the high-end companies, you can get driving gloves, really expensive model cars, colognes, neckties, cufflinks, all that kind of stuff.
Are these the same kind of model cars that you can go on eBay and get for less?
That I don't know. Okay. I'm not sure. Maybe, yeah, probably.
Usually at dealerships when they have those models, I figure that I can get it somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
No impulse buys here.
Yeah. Yeah. You get, well, that's the beauty of online shopping is you get, you know, nothing really has to be an impulse buy.
Okay. Very well. Now something for the common people. Here's a new show car from Nissan. It's called the Hyperpunk. The Tokyo Auto Show is going on right now. Tokyo Auto Show actually has a new name. I can't remember what it is, but it has mobility in it, which makes me think electric, but, you know, they have everything. Whatever the case, this is the Hyperpunk. It is created for people who are influencers, online content creators, artists, people that are younger than us, basically.
So you're saying our former co-host Jeff is going to get one of these?
Well, I don't know. You should ask him, but maybe he's the target market.
Sounds like it, yeah.
Since he's a content creator. So, you know, with the influencers and all that, sure. However, they say it's a mobile creative studio. I don't know what to say. This is manga. You know, the graphic novel illustrated, the graphic novel illustration style, let's say, that's kind of, you know, being marketed at the auto show. This is something created by Nissan, and you can see has all these nice little facets that reflects the light. That's something we've seen. I think there was a Lamborghini a few years ago that was kind of like this, but what pulled me in was the wheels.
Yeah, I can see why.
You know, in the end, the wheels are not triangular. They are round, but these, whether these are wheel covers or just lights on there, you know, I think it's kind of interesting. You see this three screen thing here?
Mm-hmm.
They get cameras from the outside and it kind of converts it into some AI thing.
Mm-hmm.
Artificial intelligence. Maybe I'm conflating that with not artificial intelligence, but augmented reality. I'm not really sure, to tell you the truth. Now I'm questioning myself. But you can see those three screens are supposed to be like a manga style of what's supposed to be outside.
Mm.
Or so they say, because this is a show car after all. Seems somewhat distracting, but hey. Also here, There are some biosensors that can detect your mood and change the lighting and music to make your mood better.
Oh, okay.
So, but I guess that begs the question, what happens if you want to be grumpy?
I'm sure you could turn them off.
Yeah, because I mean, the older I get, the grumpier I'm going to be, and it would be nice to bypass that.
Yeah, I can relate. I've got my moments.
Yeah. I mean, you know, with the way people drive, getting cut off, you know.
Especially here in Phoenix, mm-hmm. Yeah. Not the best place to drive. Great roads, beautiful locations, but you have to get to those places through other drivers.
Sure, but let's say having taught driver's ed in LA, I'll tell you LA is a lot worse than here.
Oof, yeah, that's the pinnacle, I would imagine.
Yep. Absolutely. So next, news on Steve Mignante. There is no new news on Steve Mignante, so I'm guessing he's stable. And we just wish him the best, of course. And for you folks in TV land, just be sure to check out his videos, because while he's holed up in the hospital, you looking at the videos can help him earn his keep. So just take a look at his content on YouTube. So next, the theme this week is Halloween. Halloween will be on the 31st, which is that a week from now? A week from next Tuesday? I don't really remember. But
it's next Tuesday.
Okay. So our next show is going to be after Halloween. So let's talk about Halloween now.
Yeah.
So tell us more about this scary car.
Yeah. So in keeping with the theme, I thought, well, okay, what about like kind of Halloween themed cars? And then I thought, well, you know, there's black and orange vehicles out there. And I thought, well, it would be better if we just kind of expanded it to like villainous or ominous cars, or cars that kind of look scary, you know, along those general lines. And so this is the Phantom Corsair. This is a one-off made in the late 30s. And this was actually a dream car commissioned by Rust Hines. He was the son of, he was a member of the Hines family. His, I think it was his father. His father was the guy who made his name in canned food. His father was H.J. Hines. So Rust, or Rusty Hines, he dropped out of Yale. He started a California design studio, and he wanted to make his dream car. So he commissioned these coach builders, and they had actually made one of Clark Gable's Duesenbergs. Like, they customized his Duesenberg. And they started with wood and clay models, and reportedly they even did some wind tunnel testing, which would make sense. I mean, given the shape of this car, the initial plan was to make a limited run of these at a price of almost $15,000. Now, what I've read is that the prototype cost somewhere between $24,000 and $35,000. So in the late 30s, yeah, you can imagine that is just an absolute fortune. But, you know, coming from the Hines family, I think he was good for it. Now, there is a tragic history associated with this car. So not only is it black and sinister looking, it looks like something, you know, a supervillain in the 1940s would drive. It does have a tragic history that kind of plays into the whole, you know, villainous look. So Rusty Hines was out with some friends in his Buick, and either he or one of his friends, their hat flew off, and so they stopped, they picked up the hat, they got back on the road, and then they got hit by an oncoming vehicle. So six of the people he was with were injured. He died from head trauma. So later on, this car was, well, among other things, this was featured in a movie. It was called The Young in Heart. It was a Douglas Fairbanks movie, and it was shown in the movie, but it was called The Flying Wombat. So they were trying to make it, you know, as if it was a different car.
Is this because the word wombat is so attractive?
It sure is.
To my ears.
Yeah. So, but yeah, later on, after Rusty Hines was killed, went into storage until 1942. And then you'll recognize this name, Andy Granatelli, who, among other things, was chief driver and engineer for Studebaker Racing, and he also made STP a household name. He bought it. And then a man named Herb Schreiner ended up getting it and made some changes to it. And then he, too, was killed. He was driving, of all things, a Studebaker Avanti. He was killed in that in the 1970s. And now this is part of the National Automobile Museum in Reno. It's the, from what I've read, it's the crown jewel of the collection.
Very good. Do appreciate the history. Thank you very much.
Oh, it's fun. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I had the Hot Wheels when I was a kid, and I thought, well, this is a cool looking car. Well,
they had it as the Hot Wheels?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So yeah, it's cool to learn about it.
I don't quote me on this, but I think there was a Brooklyn model of it. Do you know Brooklyn? It's like a white metal brand.
Sounds familiar.
I think they had a copy of that.
That makes sense. Oh, you know, speaking of old cars, one thing I forgot to mention was that the bones of that are a Accord 810.
So it's front wheel drive.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so obviously they made a lot of modifications to it, but yeah, it was based on a relatively rare car, because I think the 810s, they only made them, what, 1936,
1937, I want to say. Yeah, 810 and 36 and 812 and 37.
Yeah.
That's the name.
Yeah.
So, okay, so my Halloween treat, so to speak. So in the Mopar world, there's this... Sometimes these are called Halloween cars, so it's like orange and black. To me, I think the car should be black with an orange interior to be Halloween cars. So I am going to restrict. So this car to me, this 71 Cuda, is not a Halloween car to me. I just think, like, you know, there's plenty of orange and black cars out there. I think part of the novelty of this should be reserved for the interior, because they had an orange interior in 1971. So, for example, you can have this Plymouth GTX 71. The Roadrunner looks similar. And you could get this interior. This, to me, would be a Halloween car.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, you can see the actual interior isn't an orange car, but it's just like, it's not as interesting to me. It should be sinister in some way if it's about Halloween. So black.
Yeah. Black is direct route to that, definitely. Yeah.
At least in our generation, you know, black has different meanings. You know, it's probably like black is the wedding color somewhere. You know what I mean?
Could be, yeah.
Yeah. So it's a cultural thing. So here we have a black Cuda. And you could get this orange interior. You could also get this orange cloth interior.
Oh, okay.
Here's a black Duster 340. You could get this orange interior or this orange cloth interior.
Yeah, it's a horror movie set in the woods.
So those are the orange colored Mopar interiors, the Halloween cars. Chrysler was not the first with orange interiors, just to be clear. Think about the 69 Camaro pace car.
Oh, yeah. Because they had the houndstooth in there, right?
Houndstooth, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's a white car. So,
that's kind of like a Whataburger car. You know, the white and the orange.
Yeah, I'm not really familiar with Whataburger. I mean, that's probably more of a Southwestern chain.
Yeah, I mean, I know we had them in Texas. I think we have a few here.
Oh, we definitely have a few here. It's just I've never been compelled to go.
Oh, so I'm trying. Like,
what is this Whataburger? You know, it's kind of like what I think.
It's tasty.
Is it?
Oh, yeah.
It's fast food.
I mean, yeah.
But it's okay. I mean, is it like a Wendy's type of tasty or a McDonald's? I mean, like, where's in the scale of tastiness when it comes to fast food?
I would say as far as fast food burgers, Whataburger is pretty high up there.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, and the fries are good. I mean, you know, a lot of people rave about In-N-Out, and you get the animal style. The burger's good, but the fries, have always been hopeless.
Shock me one of the people who thinks that In-N-Out is overrated. I mean, it's fast food, so it's just that if I'm going to spend $6 on a burger, might as well spend another $10 for a good burger at a bar.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. So... the fries, I would say I prefer the flavor of McDonald's fries.
Oh yeah.
You know, I think I know they make the fries there. I think they're legit. It's just a shame that they don't taste as good as the other ones.
You're saying In-N-Out's fries? Yeah, exactly. It's a miracle. Yeah, they make them fresh there, and they taste like packing material.
Well, it's better than, let's say, Shake Shack. They got the crinkle fries, and that just doesn't interest me.
Mm.
But the burger at Shake Shack's good. I mean, for a fast food burger.
Well, I think we got another podcast.
Yeah. Anyway, so next on the Halloween theme.
Okay, so I'm a big James Bond fan. I read all the original Ian Fleming novels. You read them? Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I even read all the continuation novels, which maybe not the best idea because there are a lot of stinkers. And then I love the movies as well. So every now and then I think to myself, you know, if I was writing a James Bond novel, what would the villain have? And for some reason, the Bugatti Veyron pops into my head, specifically this color combination, because there's something, I mean, it fits a James Bond villain in terms of the price and the exclusivity and the power, you know, because this was, you know, $1 million plus car, 987 horsepower, W16 quad turbo, just over the top, 253 mile an hour top speed, over the top, expensive, exclusive. But then this shape, like it kind of reminds me of like you know, like an ancient, something you would see in you know, ancient Egypt, like the scarab, you know, like. And there's something kind of ominous about that color combination and that shape and that association to me. And I can just picture, you know, a James Bond villain just tooling around in one of these.
I don't know. You didn't ask me, but the real villain here is the guy charging you $5,000 for an oil change.
Oh yeah. This is one of those cars where everything associated with it is just telephone numbers.
I wonder if they have like a shop manual for this car.
Well, I'm sure they do.
Do stuff yourself.
Takes a while. Yeah, because that's the thing. It's like they package everything in to such a, you know, a relatively small shape that you would have to take so many things off to get to other components. And even the I remember it might have been in a video I was watching years ago. It might have been Top Gear. They were saying like those control stocks are made out of magnesium. So I think like one of those control stocks is like several thousand dollars.
You know, it would suck if you like dropped an In-N-Out fryer here accidentally.
Stink up the whole place.
Then you have to like go underneath the seat, try to get it, and you find out that it's like completely sealed. You can't get the fry.
Yeah, well, you know, I guess you could, you know, you could just get another one.
Yeah.
Do you remember that episode of The Simpsons? Krusty the Clown was walking through his house and he tells his assistant, and he says, "My house is dirty, buy me a new one."
So, okay. On the Halloween theme, I thought I would talk about some grotesque cars.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, yeah, well, it's not undead. I mean, Edsel's definitely dead. Yeah.
So I think that Edsel has been a common whipping boy in the past. Not so much now, but still, I never really thought that Edsel was ugly, especially compared with some of its contemporaries. Now, I remember Life magazine in the early 80s had 10 ugliest cars. I still have the issue. And this Buick, a 58 Buick was on it. And the 58 GM cars sometimes are singled out for being, like, say, a little bit overwrought.
I get that, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's not ugly. It's just busy.
I think the Oldsmobile should be the winner of the GM overwroughtness.
Yeah, that rear end is, woof.
I mean, the rear end's okay. I mean, there's this joke that one of the stylists like said this was a staff and put like musical notes on it.
Oh, okay.
Which I think is kind of funny.
Well, we would distract from the flatness. I mean, it's just like a freaking door they put back there.
But, you know, I think with this, it's just that Oldsmobile was kind of, you know, it was the Rocket Division. The first car with Cadillac in 1949 to have a high compression V8. Here they are 9, 10 model years later, and this is what they have. So it's like, what happened? In any case, I don't think this is one of the ugliest cars ever. I just think it's overwrought. Even a 58 Packard, I don't think is the ugliest car, but...
just kind of jumbled.
Yeah, you know, these, you can see here, it was actually designed as a single headlight car. And in 58, you can have quads. So they kind of created these pods. You know, that's why you kind of see this popping out here like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you know, this is a badge engineered Studebaker. Didn't come off too well.
Packard Baker.
Yeah. I don't own it. Let's get a little bit uglier though. Let's say grotesque is a better word. This is a Frontenac. This is a Canadian Falcon, built only in 1 year. So imagine a Falcon with this grill. That's what it is.
It's not ugly. It's just kind of random.
Yeah, but I mean, sure, it's random. But let's say compare with a Falcon, which was clean and conventional. And then you have this that's just kind of, you know, what is it trying to be? I don't know.
It's just trying to be. That's the thing. It also strikes me as one of those cars where they're just trying anything to be different, which I understand. I mean, they have to do it.
Well, this is what I imagine a lot of the Canadian cars are like, because you look at these Meteors and Monarchs, I guess. And I think Frontenac was its own brand, let's say, wasn't part of any of these Canadian Fords. I think often what they had, let's say you have all these clay designs at the automaker and the design studio, and they went with one, and maybe one of the other ones that were rejected, they used for Canada. That's kind of like...
Oh, okay, yeah, because it's already done.
Yeah, because if you think about this, when was this design? This was probably designed in 57, maybe. What was going on in 57 at the time versus 1960? So, yeah, the Falcon came off clean, but... You know, they used some of the equity of their 1957 paradigm, and this was the result. That's kind of how I imagined it. I could be wrong.
You got me. I think what would help a little bit is off-centering that script badge. Because having a name badge right in the middle is not unheard of, but I think with the script, it would look a little... more elegant if it was set off to one side or the other.
Or just remove it.
That, you know,
too? It'd be cleaner, for sure. So, grotesque cars. Here's a Fiat Multipla. I want to say this is 2009 or so. Can't really remember. It's a people mover. You know, it's kind of like this funky wagon.
It's like a glorified golf cart.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what they were thinking. And it was just one of those things like, okay, it doesn't matter what we were thinking. The people are going to like it because it's practical. I have no idea, but it's grotesque.
I can see this having a cult following, though, because a lot of people, you know, you give certain vehicles enough time, and I'm sure there's a subculture of people that,
yeah,
you know,
maybe
really like
this. Maybe. Let's hope they're Italian or French, because they're the quirky ones of the bunch. Now, here's an original Fiat Multipla, which I find a little bit more endearing, a little bit more cute.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. You
know, it looks like a Fiat 600 on steroids with, meanwhile, they like put their finger in their mouth and like that. Yeah. that's kind of what it comes off like to me. So this is not part of the grotesqueness. I'm just kind of showing a lineage with that. So... there's this South Korean brand called SsangYong that has some really grotesque cars. This, to me, it looks like they got something and pushed someone's eyes towards the middle of their face.
What was it? There was a car, I think maybe the mid to late 50s. They had those really inset headlights. Maybe it was a Healy or a... golly, now you got me thinking. Yeah, because there was like a roadster that had the eyes really pushed into the middle, and I just never really liked the design of that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm interested to know what it is.
I'll have to look it up.
I've seen this overseas. It's hideous.
I don't think it's that bad.
I mean, it's like an ugly, it's cartoonish in a very ugly way. So there's more Sanyongs.
Just okay. Awkward.
I mean, it's like, in this case, it's like they pushed the nose and the mouth down.
Yeah, those headlights just look out of place there.
Yeah. And even like when you see from the back, the proportions are just a little bit off. It's like, you'll see another one. Just hold on. I'm not sure what this is other than it's a Sanyong, but you know, it's like the balance, like with the taillights in respect to the backlight, all that is a little bit off, which I think tends to be common with a lot of the Sanyongs. Like this, look at this. I think if they moved this up a bit, there'd be a little bit more balance.
Yeah, because you see those lines on the side, they flow, and then you would think, oh, they'll connect with the taillights, and they don't.
Exactly.
They just go off into nothing.
In the end, it looks like they had this sedan, and then they made it into some kind of SUV, and they just elevated this, and there's just like all this negative space. Keep in mind, folks, I'm not a designer at all. So, but yeah, it's just like the proportions where things should be are just a little bit off.
Mm-hmm.
And that just seems to be common with a lot of Sanyongs. I just don't get it at all. This is grotesque. Hideous.
Yeah, they're definitely not the best looking vehicles I've ever seen. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. So next for our Halloween special, what's the deal with this?
This is like the Veyron, you know. I've spent a lot of time thinking about the James Bond, world of James Bond, you know. In fact, maybe I shouldn't be admitting this, but at one point, I think in college, I wrote some fan fiction, James Bond fan fiction.
Yeah, you shouldn't mention
it. Whatever. And this is, yeah, like the Veyron. Like, I was just driving one day and it popped into my head like, oh, James Bond villain car, you know, and the Rolls-Royce Phantom Coupe, or Coupe, I guess, popped into my head. And this is like the Veyron. It's expensive. It's exclusive. But what I thought about, what really stuck out about this to me was I was picturing in the novels and even in the movies, you know, a lot of the villains that James Bond faces are cheats. You know, they're not only wealthy and successful, like industrialists or just criminal masterminds, but they're also cheats. Like they cheat at golf or they cheat at cards or backgammon or whatever it is. And there's that kind of ruthlessness and that unwillingness to play by the rules. And this car popped into my head because I pictured the villain driving it. And then there was some, you know, like their mistress or an enemy, and they're driving this big, heavy car. This is like between 5,000 and 6,000 pounds. And, you know, they're chasing their mistress or, you know, one of their enemies, and they hit them with this hand-built car and they run them off the road and kill them. Like, I just pictured that violence with this heavy sort of monolithic car.
Here's a question. Why does this have different headlights from this one?
I'm thinking one of these is an earlier version than the other.
I don't think these round projector headlights are very attractive.
They are kind of out of place, you know, given the rest of the line.
You ever see those Lincolns, let's say, it was probably a Mark VI from the late 70s, early 80s, where they had like the headlights on the headlight doors?
Oh, gosh.
It looked really goofy, and I don't know what was the reason for that, but that's what this reminds me of.
Yeah, sometimes I feel like designers, you know, they have to introduce like a mid-cycle refresh or whatever that make it look different from the predecessor, right?
Yeah, but they can make it look good.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like, I think sometimes, you know, I know they're under tight schedules and everything, and they just come up with something to make it look different. But it's like, if had they had more time, it would look more graceful. Like, car that really infuriates me, it was a few generations ago, the Honda Accord, and they had like the, I think the Alteza style taillights, like they had the clear casings for them. And then when they did the mid-cycle refresh to make the back end look slightly different, they just put these like red, I don't even know if they were bars. They might've just been reflectors on the trunk lid that connected to those. And I'm like, that is the laziest, like, you know, lowest effort way to differentiate it, but it got the job done. But anyway, yeah, I thought this was, you know, this would, that whole scene popped into my head with this car.
So my Halloween thing. Okay, Christine, do you know what kind of car this is?
Gosh, it's a Fury, right?
Well, maybe.
I've never seen the movie. I've just, you know, caught bits and pieces of, you know, about the car.
So here's the deal. This is almost like a rant, but it's Halloween, so why not? So this car, as pictured, is like in the movie. They call it a Fury. It's not a Fury. All Furies were an off-white with gold trim. These are Furies. This is a Belvedere. So every time you see a car like this online, you're going to get someone commenting, it's a Fury. It's not. This is a Belvedere. This is a Fury. Furies were all one color. They're all some kind of off-white from 56 to 58.
Interesting.
So, but because of this movie and the book, in fact, I've read that the book calls it like a four, it's a four-door Fury or something like that. It's just like a regular, I mean, they didn't make four-door Furies, but they were calling it a regular sedan, but using the Fury name because Stephen King didn't do his research properly. I mean, never mind the fact that he's a great writer. You know, he's, I'll give him props.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's not a Fury, but c'est la vie. It's, you know, the internet's going to continue to say that it's a Fury, and it's not. So.
Well, there you have it. Yeah, yeah, because I'd always seen it referred to as a Fury. And
so next, Auto Hunter picks.
Oh, yes.
Why don't you tell us a little bit more about this one?
Okay, so that is a 72 Pontiac Luxury Le Mans. Let me pull up my notes here.
Not Le Mans.
Yeah, either way.
Did I say that right?
Yeah, see, I thought about saying Le Mans, but, you know, I thought Le maybe Mans. That's too snooty. I don't know.
Yeah, this is a Pontiac after all.
But, you know, this one's interesting because it's, I mean, you know, it appears to be in great shape. It's an interesting color. It's Revere Silver, which, you know, from certain angles, it looks kind of green, like a sort of frost green. And then you got those wheel skirts, the vinyl top. Yeah, so this one's got power brakes, bucket seats, power steering, you know, a set of conveniences there. And then what set the luxury Le Mans apart, part of the package was it got its own special grill trim, those the monogram that you can see there on the vinyl top, extra sound insulation, and then yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I believe the skirts were included with the model as well, if I'm correct.
Let's see. I don't have that here in my notes, but that would make sense. I mean, it definitely makes the look there. But yeah, this was, you know, I'd seen its, you know, plenty of its cousins, obviously, in the GTOs, but this one was a new one on me. And yeah, it's just a little bit different. So this one's currently up for auction, and this will close after this episode appears online. So
are you saying, So that's like tomorrow?
This one actually ends
Thursday.
So I always try to time them after, you know, at least the Friday after the episode comes out. Okay. So this is, you know, this comes out what? This episode drops the 26th. So this ends on the 27th or later.
Okay.
So I just want to leave enough time for everybody out there to place a bid on this if they're interested.
Okay, very good. So I have a Pontiac II for my Auto Hunter pick. This is a 1965 Pontiac II plus two. So this is a Catalina-based performance package, a 2 plus 2. So it's like the GTO's big brother. Came standard with a 421 engine, 4-barrel, 338 horsepower. You could get tri-power, which I believe was 356. And then there's also the 421HO, which had 376 horsepower. So this one... It's my understanding, of course, everyone watching this, if you're interested in this and you go to autohunter.com, you can reach out to the seller and get the absolute best information, better than what I can give you. I believe this is originally a 4-barrel car. I do know that the automatic, the turbo 400, has been replaced by a turbo 350. But otherwise, it looks like a very nice Pontiac, and 65s and 66s. This is a 65. You can't go wrong. This one's got the 8 lug wheels, air conditioned car, nice color. The interior is very nice and white. Quite a nice car.
Yeah, it's a great color combo. Now, what's the deal with the 8 lug wheels? I mean, what was there a specific rationale for that?
It's just a wheel design. That's all. I mean, okay. I mean, I think they have a cooling factor for the brakes. I think there's a functional thing designed to it.
Okay.
But otherwise, it's just a wheel. You could not get it with disc brakes, as far as I know.
Mm.
But they're just a very nice looking wheel. That's all it is.
Yeah, it's a great looking car overall. Yep. I mean, it's a great color combo, too.
Absolutely. So next, your other Auto Hunter pick is?
This is a 2023 Corvette Z06 convertible.
So what happened? They don't like it? They just bought it and don't like it?
I don't know. I can't imagine why they wouldn't.
I mean, exactly.
Yeah, it's got under 300 miles. And then...
So it's pretty much brand new.
Yeah, and this is the top of the line trim level for the Z06 convertible. It's got the 3LZ package, so you have, you know, leather-wrapped interior elements. You got the rear-view camera mirror. You got the GT2 style or the GT2 seats, front lift system, high-res, parking cameras, and then of course under the mid-engine covers, the 5.5-liter naturally aspirated LT6 V8. So it pumps out 670 horsepower, 460 pound-feet of torque, and then they've got a, you know, 8-speed Tremec dual clutch.
I would say if I had a bone to pick about this vehicle, it just looks kind of plain and white. I mean, white and red's great.
Yeah, see, that's what drew me in about this is, yeah, you got that pop of red on the inside.
I guess you can see a little bit with the top off here.
Yeah.
But I don't know, it's just a little plain for me. Not that I need anything fancy, but cool car. I mean, definitely one of the best sports cars in the world.
Yeah, these have gotten really good reviews, and you know, it's just an improvement upon what was already a revolutionary way of doing the Corvette. Because for so long, you know, there'd been talk, oh, they're going to make a mid-engine vet. They're going to do this. And then finally they did it in 2020. And then, you know, they add power and, suspension refinements. This has got the magnetic ride control 4.0 on there. And then, of course, all the other enhancements that they make to the Z06 to make it a more, you know, track capable car. And a part of that, you know, if you're familiar with some of the trouble that they had with the C7 Z06, you know, was heat management. So there's 5 heat exchangers on this. You know, there's, I think that was a big lesson in the development was, okay, well, it's, you know, we can make a fast car, we can make a track capable car, but, you know, when you do forced induction, obviously that generates a lot of heat. Now, this is naturally aspirated. But yeah, you're still, you know, cooling is always an issue, you know, with the track cars, you know, you want to keep them from cooking themselves. But yeah, this one is, this one's up on Auto Hunter right now. It's got the original window sticker. And yeah, when it left the factory, this was $139,000. So this being, you know, such a new car, it does have the remainders of its factory warranty coverage as well.
Very good. So my Auto Hunter pick is this 1969 Camaro Z28. Now, how do you know it's a Z28? Many times you need documentation. The seller doesn't provide any. It doesn't even have a 302 anymore. It has a 350. Still has a 4-speed, like all Z28s. But if you look at the data plate, X77 means it's a Z28. X77 is for base Camaros. If it was a Camaro with the Z21 style group, which let's say adds a lot of bright work, drip moldings, maybe like the vents here chromed, has all that, that code's going to be X33 instead of X77 on the data plate. If it has a Rally Sport package, which is Z22, I believe, it'll also say X33 in the data plate, signifying it's a Z28. So we know this is a Z28. We know it's not a fancy Z28. We know it's a Z28 without the original engine or the proper engine, but it's an honest-to-goodness Z28. So I just thought this was a learning moment for somebody, if not us.
Makes me wonder if back in the day it got driven, you know, a little too much like a Z28 should be driven, you know?
Nah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Maybe that's why the engine got replaced, but who knows?
Yeah, but, you know, it's these cars can be a mystery. Go to Camaros.org is probably the best Camaro site. That's where you can find a lot of this information, because a lot of it's confusing.
Oh, yeah, you know, exactly.
Saying X77 here, Z21 there.
Well, and then, you know, there's a difference between, you know, which plant it was made in, things like that.
Yeah, exactly. So just to back up a bit, this, the 2+2, that expires on the 31st, which is a Tuesday. So if you want that car, you have to bid by Tuesday. And this Camaro Z28 is the 27th, which is Friday. That's in a few days.
Yeah. So the day after this episode drops. Yes.
So bid away. Otherwise, I believe that is it for this week's Auto Hunter Drive the Bid, powered by ClassicCars.com. Thank you, Derek, for your contribution this week. And thank you very much for watching and listening. We'll be back next week. Don't forget to press like on YouTube if you're watching it there. And we'll see you soon. Thank you.